Many a tear has to fall, but it's all in the game.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, from Green Med Info, we're going to talk about a lot of the problems that we get from using statin drugs and what are the natural non-toxic alternatives. We're going to also discuss about more women veterans are homeless. Well, we have plenty of housing, then why do we have 44 million Americans who don't have homes? Also, from our environmental segment today, we're going to look at British Petroleum Gulf of Mexico disaster. It's worse than what we were told. What's the aftermath? How about deadly bacteria found in the tar balls? And there's lots of them. Also today, almonds, raw almonds, USDA and agribusiness conspire to mislead the consumer. Also from our issue of the day, from Joel Hirshhorn of Global Research, do you still believe in the American dream? The frog revolution, mounting social inequality, and the super-rich numbers explain U.S. frog revolution. And by that, the frog revolution means, you know, the frog that sits in the pot and the water's turned up, doesn't pay attention because it's done slowly until one day it's consumed because it didn't get out of harm's way. I call it watching Katrina. A very interesting commentary that I want my guest to hear prior to coming on the program today. Professor Amit Goswami is a theoretical nuclear physicist and a professor emeritus at the University of Oregon's Institute for Theoretical Physics. We're going to talk about, in our Conversations with Remarkable Minds segment, I'm setting aside a whole half hour for him, quantum activism. What do I mean by that? I mean applying the insights of quantum physics into understanding the clash of paradigms and how we can align our thoughts to constructive positive change rather than feeling chronically, constantly, and acutely victimized by those who have more power and looking at ourselves as helpless and hopeless. Nothing could be further from the truth, and we'll talk about that. However, I want him to hear two stories that appeared today, one by Dr. David Brownstein, and it's called The American Dietetic Association Wants Nutrition Prisons. You heard me right. This is the first time you've heard this. Behind this is ALEC. In all 50 states, they not only want anyone who is not a registered dietitian, and you have to understand what that means. I am a registered dietitian. So I graduated from dietetic school and did the whole 600 hours of apprenticeship at Trafalgar Hospital. You have to understand, you learn nothing about health when you're a dietitian. Nothing. Zero. Zip. Less than nothing. In fact, dietitians cause 50,000 Americans to die of malnutrition they got from the dietitians in hospitals in 1 year. But they have the power. And they're influencing legislators through ALEC. They not only want, let me just put it in practical concept. Let's say that you have a PhD in nutrition, clinical nutrition from Harvard University, and you're counseling people. And let's say you have a postdoctorate from Cambridge University in clinical nutrition. So there's literally nothing more academically you can learn in the world about nutrition and helping people. Under the bills they want, you could go to prison and be fined if you offer any information, including free information. What do you think that's going to do to freedom of speech? In fact, so bad that one nutritionist, a master's degree in nutrition from UCLA, actually had people from the state there with tape recorders to see in a free lecture, would she mention anything that constituted nutritional advice, and hence she would have been arrested. Right under your noses, while everyone slept, the lobbyists, the special interest group were working. Well, on the one hand, we have a lot of people wanting to change their unhealthy lifestyles and looking towards nutritionists to help them. This is how the game's played. And also from Gary Taubes of the New York Times, is sugar toxic? He's referring to a Robert Lustig, lecture, Sugar the Bitter Truth, which was posted on YouTube. And I'm going to take issue with the New York Times. I'm definitely taking issue with Gary Tubbs on today's show. And both of these topics are part of what my guest and I are going to discuss. That's why he's going to be on the line when I give you the input on sugar and on nutrition. And if you don't have an ADA license, you go to prison. Wow. Who knew? But we always start with the latest on health and nutrition information. Right now, there is an enormous amount of scientific evidence that shows that the cholesterol-lowering class of drugs that we call statins have over 300 different toxic effects upon the body. This is from dozens and dozens and dozens of quality independent studies. And yet, virtually our entire national health policy, all medical insurance premium guidelines, all the doctors in America, with rare exception, would tell you that a statin drug is what you want to use first if you want to lower your cholesterol. In fact, right now, one in every four adults in the United States over 45 are currently using a statin drug, supposedly to prevent heart disease. Well, hello, it doesn't prevent heart disease. First, let's dispel from greenmedinfo.com some of the cholesterol myth. And I remember when I wrote my first article challenging the cholesterol myth, I think it was in Family Circle magazine back around 1970. And literally for the last 40 years, statin drugs have successfully been used because people were afraid of dying of a heart attack. And that was because we were told that cholesterol causes plaque buildup in the arteries, and that will ultimately block your artery from having blood flow through, and that will cause you to become sickened or die. So the drug companies and the entire medical establishment all began to, with a consensus, to say that cholesterol is the problem. And as a result, today, $25 billion a year are spent on statin drug sales. In fact, it's one of the highest profitable sales of any drug in history. It is true that oxidation in our body and increases low-density lipoproteins. And it is true that those are found in the atheromatosis plaque that is found in damaged arteries. It is less likely a cause than an effect of heart disease. The underlying damage to the lining of the artery, which could be infectious or chemical or stress or nutritionally deficient. For example, if you have a deficiency of vitamin B12, vitamin B6, folic acid, trimethylglycine, any one of those can cause you to have an increase in homocysteine, and that can cause a problem with your arteries and your heart. Now, all that comes before the immune response that results in plaque buildup there. So just blaming cholesterol for causing heart disease is like blaming a scab for the injury that caused it to form, or like blaming the Band-Aid for the scab it is covering. This is, after all, the inborn and fatal flaw of allopathic medicine, what I call officially sanctioned medicine, the only truth medicine, the one and only medicine. It only focuses upon symptoms of disease, which it then foolishly attempts to suppress by any chemical means necessary. Let us look at the truth. We'll call this death by medicine. No one can deny, according to the latest from GreenMed, that statins do exactly what they are designed to do. They suppress cholesterol production and reduce measurable blood serum levels. However, I ask this question, at what price do they accomplish this feat and for what ultimate purpose? With the National Cholesterol Education Program guidelines having been designed by the so-called experts on the payroll of statin drug manufacturers, requiring ultra-low levels to obtain a strictly theoretical and numerical definition for health, statin drugs are guaranteed to receive first-line treatment status in the goal of preventing and treating heart disease through lipid suppression. Now, what is at question here is whether the unintended adverse effects of this chemical class of drugs are less, the same, or worse than the purported cardiovascular benefits they provide. Fundamentally, statin drugs damage the muscles, nerves, and the body. That's it. So much so that a dose as low as 5 milligrams a day can kill you. Let me repeat that. I am unequivocal, and I stand behind this. 5 milligrams a day of statin drugs can kill you. There are over 100 studies that we have in our possession demonstrating the myotoxic or muscle-harming effects of these drugs, and over 80 demonstrating the nerve-damaging effects as well. When you consider that a vast proportion of our body is comprised of muscles and coordinating nerve systems, this drug has the potential to cause damage to the entire body and undoubtedly does so universally, differing only in the matter of degree. The damage occurring acutely in those at the tip of the iceberg, asymmetrically in the majority of others at the base. Moreover, statin mitotoxicity is not exclusive to the skeletal muscle. If you consider that the heart is also a muscle, the brain is a muscle. In fact, it is our most tireless muscle. The heart, an obvious red flag, should go up. It is a remarkable fact that it took over 40 years before the biomedical research and publishing fields were able to produce a human study like the one published in the Journal of Clinical Cardiology, showing that statin drugs, despite billions of advertising, billions of marketing dollars, to the contrary, actually weakened the heart muscle. Let me repeat that. So all of you on statin drugs get a real wake-up call. Your doctor has not given the full and honest understanding of what a statin drug will do. In a patronizing and condescending manner, patronizing is if you're an idiot, condescending if you should ever challenge them, they don't tell you that the statin drugs actually weaken your heart. Well, hold on a second. You have a weakened heart. That's one of the reasons you went to see them. You want something to strengthen your heart, not weaken it further. These results, while disturbing, are to be expected given the well-known problem associated with statin drug use, namely the inhibition of the pathway necessary to produce the heart essential nutrient coenzyme Q10. And coenzyme Q10 deficiency itself may be a major contributing cause to heart disease. There's also research that statin drugs deplete the body of the cardioprotective minerals, and these are mineral protein complexes like zinc and selenium. This finding also explains why rates of heart failure may be increasing in the general population given these drugs. And while the discovery that statin drugs, instead of preventing heart disease, likely contribute to heart disease is surprising and counterintuitive, it should not distract from the more disturbing discovery that they contribute to over 300 diseases and adverse health effects. Millions of statin drug users around the globe are risking their lives on a bad bet that taking a magic chemical pill will reduce their risk of dying of a disease that is not caused by a lack of the drug. What is more likely to happen, however, is that the quality and duration of their lives will be reduced profoundly, along with billions of dollars of squandered cash that could have been spent on authentically medicinal and cardioprotective foods, nutrients, lifestyle, and behavioral changes. In light of these findings, a very serious question is raised. Are those who are at party to the manufacture, promotion, administration, and prescribing of these chemical classes of drugs in violation of the medical ethic principle of informed consent? And is this ethical violation, insofar as it results in injury to those who have been misled and coerced to take these drugs, are a legal or criminal one? I believe this is valuable enough to examine this openly and honestly in our society today. Now on to some other health news. Oregano. You've heard me mention that it should be in oil form in your little natural medical box for emergencies. And why? According to Dr. David Jockers of Natural News, quote, oregano is a wonderful aromatic herb that is native to the Mediterranean. It is thought to have originated in the mountains of Greece, Turkey, and Italy. It was named by the ancient Greeks Mountain Joy, Oregano is one of the most powerful healing herbs and natural antibiotics ever studied. You bet. If I suggest people take like 20 drops and put it under the tongue, it'll be a little hot for about 15 to 20 seconds. That gets into the sublingual channels in the body and into the lymphatic system, which can help kill viruses and bacteria there. And then you can follow it with some water. Or you can take some, put some in some herbal tea with honey. By the way, oregano is everywhere in the Italian diet. It's also in the Italian-American diet. And it's what gives the pizza herb taste. But it's the oregano oil I'm concerned with. Quite simply, it is right up there with colloidal silver and colloidal gold as a natural antibiotic. And when you use them all together, you can stop a lot of stuff. If we just bathe the person with MRSA, any of the scabs or scrapes or cuts, or and with this, what a difference it would make. In fact, oregano has been found in a recent study to be significantly better than all the 18 currently used antibiotics in the United States of MRSA staph infections. The strong fennel antioxidant destroys pathogenic bacteria and viruses and yeast and breaks down their walls. Now, if someone had MRSA, you bet the first thing I'm going to say is you go in and you get a double dose of ozone, 60 at 60 twice in a day, and then you take this internally, and then you apply this topically. I wouldn't use the wild oregano oil directly on a wound unless it was gangrene, because it's going to burn it, just like some of the peppermint oils might, a cinnamomatic oil would, tea tree oil would. So you have to use it in dilute form. But taking it internally while you apply the colloidal silver topically, that's doable. It is incredible as an antioxidant, has very high ORAC. So one more reason that we should always have at all times oregano oil and always carry it with you when you travel. You can get a little 2-ounce container so it'll get through any of your customs. From Healthy Times, baby receives cocktail of 7 vaccines and immediately loses his ability to speak. But that's not unusual. Here's what's unusual. Recovers with homeopathic shock remedies. This is a true story about baby Irene's dad agreed with his homeopathic physician, a Dr. Eagle, about the dangers of vaccine. He certainly did not plan on vaccinating his 4-month-old daughter. But last year, under a tremendous amount of pressure from the family pediatrician, he and his wife acquiesced and allowed a single injection cocktail of 7 vaccines. They had the DPT, which is diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus. They had the Hib, they had pneumococcal, they had polio and influenza. And once home, she had a fever, and the parents began to notice that her normal babbling and cooing and baby talk stopped completely. No longer talk. She would open her mouth and appear as if she were trying to speak, but could only manage to stick her tongue out. Nothing came out. And that's when they went to see this Dr. Eagle in search of a homeopathic remedy. Now, here's the interesting part of this story. 2 days after the shot, Irene received a low-dose homeopathic remedy for shock. The following day, she got a high-dose shock remedy, followed by a remedy commonly used for vaccinosis. The next 3 months were a roller coaster of improvements and regressions as Irene received homeopathic doses of each of the 7 vaccines that caused the damage. This is an excellent utilization of the homeopathic principle of like cures like. But as of February 8th of this year, baby Irene has returned to complete normalcy. She giggles, coos, screeches, gurgles again, much to the delight and relief of her parents. So that's what's important. Now, think of it this way. 1 in 88 children is diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. I believe that the evidence is overwhelming and compelling that the vaccines in combination and the ingredients are a major contributing factor to neurological damage and also destroy the child's natural immune system. So be aware that there is now available therapeutic homeopathics to help reverse damage in vaccine-injured infants. And that's good news, because that's new. And one final study from the Carnegie Mellon University, they finally figured out how stress influences disease. It increases inflammation, and the inflammation from stress plays havoc with the whole biochemistry in the body. So if you're depressed, you risk heart disease and infectious diseases and all forms of other conditions. And this was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. One more reason why we should pay attention to natural de-stressing techniques. Very important. The more we're able to get into nature, the more we're able to disconnect from the stressors in our lives, the less inflammation in our body, the less inflammation, the more the body can, in its own innate way, start the healing process. Now, for our issue of the day, before we take our break, and we're going to have a conversation with a remarkable mind guest, Professor Amit Goswami, one of the greatest minds in the world. You ought to just let whoever you know now, he's coming up so that they can get on board and listen to this. You won't want to miss this. And he'll be on in a few minutes. I want him to hear what I have to say, and then we're going into this. A few little quick things concerning the women veterans out there who are homeless. This is from Eric Tucker and Kristen Hall, Associated Press. Quote, Misha McLam helped keep fighter jets flying during a military career that took her halfway around the world to the Persian Gulf. But back home, the Navy aircraft specialist is barely getting by after a series of blows that undid her settled life. She was laid off from work last year and lost custody of her daughter. She grappled with alcohol abuse, a carryover from heavy drinking Navy days. She spent nights in her car before a friend's boyfriend wrecked it, moving later to a homeless shelter where the insulin needles she needs for her diabetes were stolen. She now lives in transitional housing for homeless veterans, except the government recently advised occupants to leave because of unsafe building conditions. I wasn't a loser, she says. Everybody who's homeless doesn't necessarily have to have something very mentally wrong with them. Some people just have bad circumstances with no resources. He goes on to talk about why the Veterans Administration, the Defense Department, our White House, now and in the past, have completely turned their back on veterans. Yeah, there are veterans that end up with amputations and in the battlefield, but what about all those who come back who are not physically injured but mentally damaged? We don't do a thing for them. Well, here's a positive suggestion. Why don't we insist as Americans that in every community in the United States, without exception, large or small, that we start to build real military tent cities? We do it inexpensively overseas. We already have the tents. You have one that is a food hall, mess hall. You have barracks for women, barracks for men. You have a hospital. You have counseling, psychological counseling, physical counseling, and even tents for couples who are trying to make time together before they enter back into that home infrequently with violence if they're not decommissioned mentally. Now, that's something we could do, and we could do that on a national level. Therefore, the 980,000 homeless vets, the 735,000 sick vets with Gulf War syndrome would at least know that we as a country, for or against the wars, are not against them, and showing that we are compassionate and we are thoughtful and do something on their behalf. Also, I suggest that we start demanding of every city in the United States, turn over completely the state, the federal, and the city, any empty office space you have. And let's then get local charities and churches to go in there, Habitat for Humanity, and take these structures, which are all in good repair, and simply convert them so they can be used as usable and livable housing for people. It makes no sense to see so many tens of millions of Americans homeless while we have millions upon millions of square feet of unused space of the government in its own bureaucratic numbness, its complete stupidity, its vile and incomprehensibly inefficient systems at every level have said, well, you don't have a place here to sleep, and we don't want to see you on the park bench, and we don't want to see you in the lawns at night. We're turning the sprinklers on, and we're going to arrest you if you panhandle, and we're going to arrest the person that gives you donations, all the while they have enough room that they could actually accommodate all the homeless people. Something's terribly wrong, and we need to voice that at every local town hall meeting and every state legislator and our federal legislators. So at least we're not just helping the homeless, we're helping all the people. From our environmental section, from Global Research, from Farron Cousins, quote, the British Petroleum Gulf of Mexico disaster, environmental contamination, deadly bacteria found in tar balls. I'll quote, this is short. Since the very first tar balls began rolling onshore along the Gulf of Mexico following the Deepwater Horizon oil rig explosion and subsequent underwater gas geyser, the oil industry told us to relax because those tar balls were completely harmless. But as we approach the two-year anniversary of the disaster, new studies have confirmed that the tar balls we're seeing along our beaches contain bacteria that are capable of killing human beings. The new study conducted by scientists at Auburn University confirmed the presence of a bacteria called Vibrio vulnificus. According to researchers, this is the same bacteria that's responsible for causing illness and death from eating bad oysters. The tar balls contain concentrations of this bacteria more than 1,000% greater than the surrounding water. And even the CDC on its own website says, quote, of this particular bacteria, quote, wound infections may start as redness and swelling at the site of the wound that then can progress to affect the whole body. This vulnificus typically causes severe and life-threatening illness characterized by fever and chills, decreased blood pressure, septic shock, and blood-tinged, blistered skin lesions. Overall, the infections are fatal for 40% of the time. Wound infections with this are fatal 20% of the time. Aggressive surgical treatment can prevent death. Why didn't anyone know this? Think of all the millions of people who've gone back to eating the food out of the Gulf, swimming in the Gulf, boating in the Gulf. Our government lied to us, putting all those people at risk. This is not a fleeting threat to those of us who live or work or play along the Gulf Coast. National Geographic point out that tar balls are continuously washing up along the coast of the Gulf of Mexico, meaning that the threat of bacterial infection is not only real, but it is persistent. Just think of all the people at spring break who went into the water in the Gulf Coast without realizing how risky it is. That's the latest on health and nutrition information. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to hold our issue off for tomorrow because I'm going to spend more time with our guest, who is now standing by, and he's going to be listening to a few of the commentaries I'm going to be giving because they lead into the discussion we're going to have. That is a part of our ongoing Conversations with Remarkable Minds series. Before that, we have Lou Panessi in studio. And so tomorrow I'll deal with Do You Still Believe in the American Dream by Joel Hirshhorn, and we'll ask your feedback on that after we share that, plus the information on raw almonds. But first, before we go to our guests and the topics of the day, let's say hello to Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hi, Gary. Two quick things from me today. I did want to talk to you about one of the emails. I get so many emails, and I'm very happy that people are emailing me Hopefully you're getting a little less of them. If people do want to email me on your behalf, I'm at whnn@aol.com. I've been getting lots and lots of great emails. Secondly, I am also, I want to let everybody know that I have been overwhelmed with the response for people wanting to come to the retreat. And so just a quick note, I just want to kind of make a shout out to people. These are the kind of people that we're looking for. We're looking for people who are very optimistic and ready to pull back in their own lives, get vulnerable enough to be silent and quiet in a beautiful environment. It's going to be a very, this is not entertainment, this is not social event. This is more of your opportunity to reconnect with you and your soul, at the risk of sounding a little bit corny. But we have, I'm hoping that we were able to get a couple of sound clips from people that used to come, that were just finishing the retreat, and they were giving you their commentary, their comments on how the week went. I don't know if we have those queued up or not yet. Maybe we can do them later.
Well, hold on. Matt, did she give you any clips? Okay, we have something here. I haven't heard it. Let's hear it.
Okay.
In my journey as a social worker, I took a lot of sadness home with me. I was depleted of a lot of energy. I thought I had it all together because I would say, well, you're a very strong person. You know, you're not going to, you know, let it overwhelm you. And developed asthma. I had asthma, but the symptoms had gotten worse. 2 months ago, I became a vegan, and I thought it was going to be very hard, but it worked out very, very well for me. So I really feel that was my prerequisite, and I'm so enjoying this week. I got to do 3.5 miles on the track at this particular point in time. I was only doing one. So everything is coming up roses. It's just fantastic. I'm so happy. So this has been just marvelous. And the people that I've met, the energy here, everyone here is just absolutely phenomenal.
When Gary laid hands on me, one of the first things I experienced was when I had my eyes closed, I saw very clearly from left to right the words L-O-V-E, love. And it was just very, very strong and very clear, and this very warm sensation came over me.
I've been plagued with self-doubt for a very, very long time and feelings of stuck energy. So Gary spent some time with me today. I got cocooned in one of the huts, which was really nice. From a visual standpoint, it was like sludge, like algae, green algae that was moving. And as that moved, it was replaced by something very clear and more flowing. And it was really quite wonderful. When the time was up, I felt energized, more focused, and ready to start this new journey, whatever it might be.
Where'd you get those, Luann?
Well, you know, I don't know if you realize this, but I think last year when you had your retreat in January, you see, the people that come to these, they're so excited about their journey that they share it on tape. And we found these archives, and I thought, wouldn't this be great so people understand? See, I'm the person who's screening people, so I don't want people that are coming down who are cynical or sarcastic or who are, you know, whatever. I don't want people with agendas. See, the people that are going to be there with you on the retreat are like-minded people. They're positive, they're upbeat, and they're really ready to make fundamental changes in their life to reach higher levels of being on a daily basis once they get home. You're in a controlled environment. You're surrounded by beauty and serenity. You start the day doing yoga as the sun is coming up in the Chiki Hut. You're surrounded by aviaries of birds and animals. It's just beautiful. And you're eating whole live foods. You've got juices going on all day long. It's serenity. And people really don't have enough of that in their lives.
That I agree with. Luann, thank you. It's over to you. I'm going on with our program, but if people want to reach Luann, give them your number.
I'm at 631-504-6198, but don't call till I'm off. 631-504-6198.
When I come back to the city, I'd like to hear all those interviews. Evidently, someone was recording them, and I didn't know that, but I'd like to hear them. And Let's go over to my guest now and say hello to Professor Amit Goswami. He is a theoretical nuclear physicist and a professor emeritus at the University of Oregon's Institute for Theoretical Physics. He received his doctorate at the University of Calcutta in 1964, and he has been teaching at the University of Oregon since 1968. He has a very multidisciplinary quantum look at life, and he applies the principles of physics to multiple areas: the history of paradigm shifts, the new biology of genetics, psychology and medicine, the healing arts. And he is the author of Quantum Activist and also How Quantum Activism Can Save Civilization. I think his latest book is God Is Not Dead. And we welcome you once again to our program.
Hi, Gary.
Nice to have you with us today. I'm going to introduce this segment because it talks about what we're going to talk about, and that is quantum activism. And just bear with me for a moment. The first is from Dr. David Brownstein, a little background. There are tens of millions of Americans who are finally awakening. They're awakening to the idea that they have been either misled fully or partly, and they participated in not questioning the truth of their choices or looking at the outcome, the likely outcome of the choices they've made. As a result, one day they wake up, they're sick, they're depressed, they're divorced, they're anxious, they're bankrupt. All the different maladies that happen both physically and mentally and spiritually to us. And then they say, how did this happen? Then they began to look for answers. And a lot of times they want to do some yoga or meditation, or they might want to find some holistic life coach or health counselor or nutritionist to guide them in making healthier choices. Now, that's reasonable. And we're not talking about a few million. We're talking about tens of millions, especially senior citizens, of which there are now 90 million people in the United States over the age of 45, who really know if they don't make major quantum changes in their life, that they will go through life always on a down negative side from here on out. So what happens is, behind the scenes, the American Dietetic Association and the big aleck groups conspire to make it that only a registered dietitian can offer health counseling, and therefore exclude anyone who is a holistic-minded person who's coming from a more holistic, activist, proactive paradigm position. Let me quote from Dr. David Brownstein, quote, "You have to believe me. I'm not trying to pick a fight with registered dietitians. Unfortunately, they make it too easy. I know some very smart RDs who are very knowledgeable about nutrition. However, as compared to most of the members of the American Dietetic Association, the registered dietitians who are knowledgeable about nutrition are unfortunately few and far between. Presently, we have two-thirds of the U.S. population overweight and one-third obese. Part of the reason we have so much obesity in the United States is due to the nonsensical dietary advice of the American Dietetic Association and its members, what they've been promoting. I can assure you, the last thing we need in the United States is to have the registered dietitians control who can and cannot speak about nutrition." Forbes magazine wrote an article called, "Is the American Dietetic Association Attempting to Limit Market Competition in Nutrition Counseling?" This article is well written and goes into more detail about the nefarious activities of the American Dietetic Association. It discusses the ADA's push to pass a terrible law in every state that will only allow registered dietitians to legally have the right to talk for free or fee to a patient about nutrition. Anyone else doing so will be subjected to fines and a jail term. Let me review what is happening. And then he goes into this in depth and talks about $10,000 fine and 6 months in jail. Now, let me put this in perspective. Let's say that my guest on the phone, Dr. Goswami, had a PhD in clinical nutrition and counseled tens of thousands of people. He would go to jail for 6 months and face a $10,000 fine if he gave counseling to someone and he wasn't also a registered dietitian. That's the absurdity of this. And all this under the nose of the average person. There's where a paradigm, an old failed paradigm, a flawed paradigm. The people who promoted in their journals and their advice, eat hot dogs, hamburgers, eat everything in moderation, they've historically been wrong, but they're officially recognized as having the only truth. And through that only truth for the official paradigm, and we know no other truth in our lives, even intuitive truth, spiritual truth, physical truth, environmental truth, natural truth, animal truth, no truth is allowed in our society today to compete with the official truth. And those who try are immediately disenfranchised, disengaged from the body politic, and excluded. Whether you're a scientist, a nutritionist, a philosopher, or an activist, or a journalist like Chris Hedges, you're thrown out. So why is it that we can't learn this larger lesson to stop believing that there's only one truth? Could you please address for us, and take whatever time you need, the idea that we as a society, with all of our so-called intellect and all of our advanced education, we are so susceptible to the most primal and some of the most fundamental issues that we make our motions from insecurity rather than a complete consciousness?
Yes, Gary, I would love to. I think the first thing to clarify here is the fundamental problem. The fundamental problem, I think, is one of worldview. We have gradually been lulled into believing that everything is matter. Everything is made of matter. It may sound like a philosophical question, but once you start believing it, then you don't believe in the rest of the human condition anymore. What you are suggesting with all these different angles is precisely a point problem of worldview, because if the worldview is material, it excludes the spiritual, it excludes all the holistic elements, including vital energy or meaningful mind, values, etc. So what happens then is that you are left with only a chemical body, and then it makes sense to talk about sugar moderation, all these ideas, or it makes sense to not take a multicultural point of view, because, of course, it's all matter, and whatever you talk about is fairly meaningless because there is no meaning in the world. And this is the worldview that we have bought into for the last 60 years. It's a lot of conditioning that has gone on in the society. So nothing will change very fast. But people like you, people like me, have been talking out, and many others, as you point out, there are really millions of people who are ready to think this new way. And it is a holistic way. We have to bring back our whole human condition in the discussion. When you do that, automatically we'll be multicultural, because it is very clear that we have the gross material body, about which we know a lot because it's easy to study, and scientists have done a good job on this, a fair job, I should say, not perfect, certainly. But the subtle, our vital energy body especially, the body that Rupert Sheldrake has given a biological name, consisting of morphogenetic field, this is the body that goes behind the constitution of our organs. Organs perform biological functions, but they cannot be formed but just by the genes. That's a completely false claim by biologists who cannot back it up. There is no biological materialist theory of morphogenesis, how organs are formed from the basic molecules. Rupert Sheldrake's theory gives a foundation to this, and this also agrees with what ancient people have known all along, spiritual traditions, that we have chakras in our body where we feel our feelings. Why do we feel feelings at the chakras? Because there are organs in those chakras, and those organs are representations of this morphogenetic fields. That's what consciousness uses to make this organs in the new view. So when you include this movement of the morphogenetic fields, which I'll just refer to as vital energy to make it simple, because that's what we feel, then you recognize that the basic component of all these so-called nutrition specialists that is missing, they don't know ditty about vital energy. Their whole education is based on materialism, scientific materialism, the theory that everything is just chemical and physical, nothing else. There is nothing to biology except chemistry and physics. No. Biology has two well, not only two, actually, it's more, but immediately pressing things, which is consciousness itself, and of course, vital energy. Biology without vital energy is unthinkable. So when we miss this vital component, what happens is that gradually the nutritional aspects will be missing. The vital and the physical gets gradually detached. In extreme cases, we have the example of chronic fatigue syndrome, where people feel constantly a sort of a pain. Not sort of a pain, it's real pain, but it's really a detachment of the vital and the physical. That's what is causing the pain. So we are not getting the food that is processed. That processing changes the vital energy component of the food. These vital energies are missing from processed food. Vital energies are missing for anything that is refined, like refined sugar you were complaining about. Sugar is a major problem because it's too much refined. With that kind of refinement, the vital energy just gets disassociated. So what happens then is that when we eat anything with this kind of stuff, this kind of refined sugar, then it does not satisfy. And it is that not satisfaction that gives us more craving, and therefore we eat even more. And this is a common phenomenon. Everybody knows it. What is moderation when we cannot control the natural body reaction of needing more because we are not getting the vital energies associated with what is supposed to give us? If people could just be educated to moderate, but with non-refined sweetness. Such non-refined sweetness is certainly available as molasses and other ingredients, but that's not what is used in making food, sugary foods, and this is the basic problem with it.
Let me ask a different question here. You pose the question, there is no substantial scientific evidence to support the truths of spirituality. Therefore, what are we doing about it? And I take that to refer to our modern culture of reductionist ideology. So answer this question, please. What are we doing about all the scientific evidence that supports not only spirituality and consciousness studies, but also the many other discoveries that are not accepted yet by our leaders and the ruling official scientific elite?
Well, not only not accepted, Gary, the difficult thing is that it's a tactic that is being used, which is called benign neglect. You just ignore the fact that there is new data. You just go on with your ways because you have many people who are not particularly careful about everything that goes on the Internet or, you know, the media is under total, I mean, except people like you really look at. I mean, the media is in the worst condition that it has ever been. You know, to think of America where, we talk about freedom of expression, freedom of speech so much that we allow even dirty pornography without any hesitation, but we don't allow any dirty talk about our science, I mean, quote-unquote dirty talk, meaning that any maverick talk, any paradigm shift, media will immediately shun it, but media will publish reports of pornography anytime. So, you know, this is a sad reflection on the society because pornography is allowed by scientific materialism, which actually tells quite openly that our sexuality is like that. It is uncontrollable, etc. We have brain circuits, so we cannot change and all this stuff, and we openly flaunt it. And as you know, I vote Democrat, but Republicans have a very good point against the liberal media because it does not value values. And so we live in a very topsy-turvy world where we are forced to choose sides, whereas there is no sides. And as you know, because of the deep polarization in the society today between people who want values but only under the umbrella of religion and people who are materialist scientists who don't like any values at all because scientific materialism doesn't make any room for values, so we have a real problem, a real difficult situation.
This is why
I suggest quantum activism. Okay. We all have to take charge, and I am with you in that completely.
Okay, I want you to. I'm going to ask you in a moment to go into this in depth of how we become quantum activists, especially in light of most people confusing primarily in the context of our ego-centered subjective observer of the world and ourselves with it being consciousness, which it is not. So I'd like you to talk about that. But let me mention we're coming up to the end of our land-based interview. My guest, if you would like to read his latest book, God Is Not Dead, is Professor Amit, A-M-I-T, Goswami, G-O-S-W-A-M-I. For those of you who want to continue listening, you can listen over the telephone by calling 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. Now, would you address the following? Most of the people, at least that I speak to, confuse mind, primarily in the context of our observing the world and ourselves, and we call that consciousness. So explain the difference, and when we do know that we are acting from a higher consciousness rather than from a lower ego, since most of what we do day-to-day is ego-based, and a lot of that's based upon our fear and insecurity, or the need to align ourselves, even as reporters align themselves. Embedded reporters in a war zone will never tell you the suffering of the people we're attacking. They will never make them human. They will never put a human face on them because we deal in black and whites and absolutes. You're with us or you're our enemy. If you're our enemy, then you deserve no respect, no sympathy, no compassion. If you're with us, then God's on your side and everything is right. We deal in this childish infantilism. In every aspect of our lives, every institution has betrayed us with this infantilism, and yet how often are we afraid to become activists, afraid to take a quantum leap because of the fear or the blowback that someone in an official position will say, ah, you're challenging us, bad idea, we control the keys to everything, you don't. You want to be a good doctor? You don't look at nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories. You want to be a good teacher? Don't challenge the curriculum or how it's taught. You want to, and so it goes. Please answer this. Take your time.
Yes, I would love to, because this is first of all, it is a question of a couple of difficult concepts that have been around. First of all, consciousness. What is consciousness? Consciousness, by definition, from the etymology itself, suggests that it has to do something with knowledge. So to know, consciousness is the facility with which we know. As soon as it becomes clear that with which we know, then there is, it is also clear that consciousness has a subjectivity. It's about I knowing that you are talking about. In fact, if you look at the etymological origin, then you also know that it's I know with. To consciousness comes from a Latin word, scire, which means to know with. So it not only suggests that I, but it also suggests that there is a overall connectivity, we, lurking behind. This is the consciousness, the subtler consciousness, the higher consciousness that you are talking about. There is the ego, personal, very individualized, and then there is this collective, we. This is what consciousness is about. Now, what is so interesting today is that quantum physics has exactly this very picture of consciousness, that indeed there are two levels of consciousness. One is the conditioned level, but beyond that, there is this connected, interconnectedness that we have. And it is from that consciousness that we have the very basic definitional aspect of consciousness, namely the free will, freedom to choose. Consciousness has freedom to choose, but it's not at the level of the conditioned ego. Ego is based on the environmental, etc., genetic and all that conditioning, so it has very little choice only among conditioned alternatives. At the most, ego can say no to conditioning. That's as far as it goes. Beyond that, ego has no freedom. But the freedom is there for us. If we can lift ourselves, elevate ourselves to this higher consciousness, it is literally a kind of a lift. It's a quantum leap. So the adjective higher goes very well. It's higher also because it's cosmic. It's objective consciousness. And that's where our choice. Quantum physics says that everything in the world is possibility, including our thoughts, our feelings, And we choose out of these possibilities. Notice the power of this thinking, Gary, because as soon as it is clear that we choose, immediately it's also clear that we have to take responsibility for it. And this is the component that misses. When we divide between I and you, when we divide between either or and miss the other side completely, we make the other side as enemy. But of course, that is just not the whole story. That is the story from the ego side. But the story from the holistic side, this collective consciousness, is completely different. Then we have to take responsibility for whatever is going on in humanity itself. Now, coming back to mind. So if you take this view, then it turns out that consciousness is everything. Consciousness is the ground of being. So what is mind within that consciousness? This consciousness has many facilities to do its work. What is it? Work is to know. Know what? Know the possibilities that have not been manifest yet. So choice manifests the possibilities, gives us the manifest world. How many kinds of manifest world are there? Well, just look at how many experiences we have. We have experiences of sensing, that's the material world. That one we know very well. But then we also have experience of thinking. That's the mental world. So mind is that facility which gives consciousness the ability to think. And so think what? Think meaning. So mind processes meaning, possibilities of meaning. We choose among these possibilities when we choose new meaning. We, of course, are creative. And when we are choosing old meanings according to our conditioning, then we are acting in the conditioned ego. In the same way, consciousness has two other very important compartments. One is the vital energy that I was talking about earlier. From that, we get feeling. And then the very elevated one, that's Sri Aurobindo has called it supramental. Plato has called it the archetypal world. That's the world of values, like truth, beauty, justice, love, goodness. All that comes from that world. So we have four kinds of experiences, four kinds of worlds within the holism of consciousness, and that's the way quantum physics allows us to look at ourselves. Now, other philosophers have thought this way, and this is the most comprehensive way of thinking about mind and consciousness and what's the difference between the two. I hope I have answered your question adequately.
You've answered it beautifully, and I thank you for that. Just my own closing thought on this. Right now, we can all, I believe, agree that our culture, our global human community, nature, the oceans, land, and skies are in serious danger of spiraling into a state we might think of as chaos, a breakdown leading to randomness. Nature does not care about our political affiliations and the different policies enacted. It doesn't care about the particular religions that we subscribe to. It doesn't care about what we own and the size of our stock portfolios. Rather, it responds to the conditions present in a neutral manner according to a particular universal laws of nature. Given that humans are a part of that web of natural quantum laws, our molecules in our body act the same as in other life forms down to a bacterium. This should tell us a lot about our true relationship to the planet and the universe, and to stop for a moment and ask, are we just continuing today with a mentality confined to reductionist mechanistic thinking and acting as a major contributor to the degradation we're witnessing, or will we change the nature of our relationships into one that is driven by a higher consciousness? You are certainly helping guide us in that direction, and I thank you profoundly for your input.
You're welcome, Gary.
Professor Amit Goswami. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.